Hi, and welcome to the AA Grapevine. I'm your volunteer reader, Shelley Miller, and today I'll be reading from the May 2024 issue of the AA Grapevine. This is part two this month. We're going to get started with stories about Step 5, Tradition 5, and then we have a whole bunch of other personal stories. So let's get started. And our first story is about Step 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. And it's entitled, Naked Before My Creator. One member strips the fifth step down to this. If we don't do this vital step, we might go back to drinking. In the early 1970s, I had a role in the touring company of the Broadway musical Hair, a counterculture show that included a lot of material about sex, drugs, and protests, along with a famous scene in which the entire cast appeared naked on stage. A couple dozen of us held hands and sang, "Beads, flowers, freedom, happiness, naked as the day we were born." Of course, this caused quite a stir among reviewers and the theater going public. It was a first for Broadway audiences and a first for us performers as well. Many in the cast said things like, "My mama didn't raise me to stand up naked in front of a bunch of strangers, and what does this have to do with our message?" The writers and director assured us, "That's the point. We're going against the bourgeois values of our parents' generation. We're taking a stand. The body is a beautiful thing." And our first personal story is entitled Fish Draw. When a veteran actor would ask, "Explain to me, please, what is my motivation for taking off my clothes?" the short answer really came down to Thursday. Thursday is payday. Your motivation is your paycheck. End of debate. And so it is with our fifth step. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. The big book says, we will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. There it is. Our motivation, like the actor's motivation, is our paycheck. And in this case, the paycheck is our very lives. If we don't stand naked in front of our Creator and a tight-lipped sponsor, we may not overcome drinking. And for us, to drink is to die. They don't call alcoholism a terminal illness to scare us. The fact is that in 2014, more people died from alcohol-related causes than from overdoses of a prescription painkillers and heroin combined. Those of us who have been around a few years have seen our share of these tragic and unnecessary deaths. And in many cases, a person's return to drinking came about because they just couldn't bring themselves to admit certain shameful, embarrassing shortcomings or deeds to another person. The simple truth is, in most cases, the sponsor will reply, "Me too. I did that. You're not alone." I've heard some say, "I thought that if I really disclosed my deepest, darkest secrets, you'd throw me away. You'd be so disgusted by me, you wouldn't want me around." Revealing deep secrets would be too high a risk to take. I never really thought that. By the time I had completed my first inventory, I had seen enough of the love and tolerance in our fellowship that I knew I wasn't alone. I knew I wouldn't and couldn't be cast away. I even believed in my heart of hearts that I hadn't done anything others hadn't done. But these were my wrongs. That's very different, as was the case with the Hair nude scene. When the director said, "You're not showing them any scene they haven't seen before," the timid ones would respond, "Well, they haven't seen mine." Yeah, they haven't seen mine. I could understand that God and the fellowship of AA would accept and forgive the most heinous acts any member committed while drinking. Heck, so would I, as I'm a loving person. But if I confess all the shameful, embarrassing things I did and thought, I could never show my face again. You might be willing to let it go, but could I? The principle I've seen normally identified with Step 5 is integrity. Certainly, integrity is paramount to sharing a searching and fearless moral inventory with another human being. But it isn't the only principle. It also takes a bit of courage to open up like that. Honesty, willingness, discipline, and faith come into play as well. And at least in my own case, humility was imperative. Until I could accept that my case was not different, that I was just like you, I lacked the humility to allow God and AA to save my life. People told me, get in the middle of the herd and become a worker among workers. And they were right. It turned out that, like most of the steps, taking step 5 was not difficult, but thinking about it was a real job. When I finally did take the step, I stood naked before my Creator and let my loving sponsor and let the grace of a loving God wash over me. Easy? And what was my motivation? Yep, the paycheck. Signed, Doug R. in Los Angeles, California. And we also have a tradition this month, the fifth tradition. Tradition 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And the story is entitled, We Stick to What Works. While trying to help someone through the steps, he got an important reminder to stay close to our primary purpose. I had the chance to work with a man who had been attending a nearby Big Book Step Study meeting that I frequented from time to time. I met with him after the meeting, and he agreed to my conditions to sponsor him, specifically that I was in his life to bring him through the steps. He would develop his own relationship with God while acknowledging I was not an expert or mentor in any other way, and would share my experience in the AA program with him. If we gained a friendship as a result, I told him that would be great, but friendship was not the main reason for my sponsorship. He agreed to my terms, and we started to go carefully through the Big Book. At the doctor's opinion, we came to a screeching halt. As we were going over the 3 components of an alcoholic, mental obsession, physical compulsion, and spiritual malady, he told me point blank, you know I can't identify with this. I don't think I'm an alcoholic based on this, but I still want to go through the book and take the steps. I really value the peace and serenity I see from the people at the Big Book Step Study, and I want what they have. We discussed alcoholism a little more, using chapter 3, more about alcoholism, and he confirmed as I discussed each of the examples in the chapter that he absolutely didn't have a drinking problem. My ego got the better of me, and I didn't want to turn him away from the chance to do the steps, because I know the value of the steps in my life. So I tried to find some common ground. Since we couldn't get through the first step hurdle of powerlessness over alcohol, we couldn't take the first step as it's written. Consequently, I overstepped my bounds. Hurdling over the traditions, I volunteered to do the steps with him if we could identify some other substance or behavior that he was powerless over that made his life unmanageable. So we looked for another angle for his recovery, maybe through Al-Anon or drugs or food or work or any other addiction. But remarkably and fortunately for me, the tradition violator, none were to be found, and he couldn't identify with any of them. The end result was that we parted company, and I didn't see him after that. The point I'm getting to is that, as one AA speaker I've heard says, all can come into AA, and all we ask is that you catch alcoholism so we can work our recovery as laid out in the 12 steps. There was my answer. I was in error to try to be an expert in any other addiction, even if it meant I could bring someone through our hallowed process. I needed to stick with what works, and what works is our primary purpose. I also learned that I needed to maintain the code of love and tolerance. I needed to be accepting of those having other addictions besides alcohol, or maybe no addictions, and I need to send out gentle reminders about our traditions, but to do so in private, in the spirit of consideration of others. The truth will flush itself out eventually, keeping in mind our primary purpose to the suffering alcoholic. Signed, George H. in Kingston, New Hampshire. Story section, and the first one's entitled A Mother's Day Wish. After years of heartache and regret, she found the son her drinking took away. 2 years before I got to AA, I gave birth to a beautiful baby boy. He was beautiful and healthy, but I was not so beautiful or ready to take on the responsibility of raising a child. I gave him away. Before leaving the hospital, I had the nurse unwrap my son from his blanket so I could see his fingers and toes. I just knew I couldn't hold him because I would never let him go. I left the hospital without a tear. I held it in to not show my parents or others how broken my heart was. Instead, I buried my feelings in alcohol. I can't remember most of the next 2 years as I drank to blackout or pass out. I often thought of suicide. The EAP director at my steel company would tell me, "Marianne, you are an alcoholic. If you stop drinking, you will get better. You will." So in 1982, after living a life of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, I stumbled into rehab, angry, hungover, and dazed to save my job. I was 22 years old. After I got sober, the guilt of giving up my son was first and foremost in my mind. On my first sober Mother's Day, I went to my AA meeting, hoping to distract my thoughts. While walking to my car after the meeting, a woman walking in the same direction turned and asked if I had children. I answered, "Yes, a son, but I didn't have him." She responded that she had two, but didn't have them either. We looked at each other and kept walking. I learned that morning that when I think I have it bad, someone else always has it worse. When I got my 2 years, I had my first miracle of sobriety. My daughter was born. I had her in the same hospital and the same room where I had my son. This time I was ready to be a sober mom. A year later, my next miracle happened. My second daughter was born at Christmas. These days were some of the happiest times in my life. But all the while, in the back of my mind, I would wonder where and how my son was. I called the place that had information about my son for years, but got nowhere. I finally had to surrender. I turned him over and trusted he was in good hands. Knowing he was a chosen child helped me ease my heartache. I knew that his parents had waited 3 years for a baby. I kept my profile at the organization updated, just in case one day he might seek me out. Many years later, in 2019, my daughter was watching a TV show about finding people. She asked me about her brother and suggested I try once more, so I did. A new woman worked in the adoption department, and she had an empathetic ear. After doing a search on her computer, she told me that my son was very findable. I felt like God touched my life once again. I filled out an application. I was ready to face whatever the outcome was to be. Next, I wrote a short introduction letter to see if we were on the same page. He was. We were encouraged to send a few more letters to get to know each other and our purpose for meeting. I longed to know if he was doing well in life. I wanted him to know my door was open, that he was loved. I found myself writing phrases like "more will be revealed" and other AA terms in my letters. Soon the time came when we could talk. He told me he had no resentments about my decision to let him go. He had great parents and a good upbringing. I was so relieved. As he spoke, I noticed the tone of the words he used was similar to mine, AA-like. I was so curious. I asked, "Are you a friend of Bill's?" Turns out he knew exactly what I meant. "Yes," he said. He had 9 years sober, a sponsor, and a wonderful network on the other side of town. He had even been to the same H&I commitment I had when my co-chair was there. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. One Monday night, sometime later, I went to a meeting with my dear AA friends Mike and Brenda. I don't usually attend that meeting. I went in and looked around the room, and suddenly I got a wave from a man with a mask. It was during COVID. I knew immediately it was my son. My heart skipped a beat. I was so full of joy, but he never had been to that meeting before. His sponsor was speaking. I sat there listening. I knew his sponsor from years of service work in AA. After his sponsor spoke, he called on my son to share. Then he called on me. Then he called on a group of men he brought. After the meeting, I walked over to my son and asked if we could pray together when the meeting closed. We did, and he gave me a big hug. His sponsor came over, and my son introduced me as his mom. I couldn't believe what I was hearing after all these years. Turns out my son's a good man. It was totally in God's time that we would meet. I introduced him to my friend Mike, and Mike picked my son up with a big bear hug and cried. I then introduced him to Brenda, and she cried too. My son told me he felt like a celebrity that night. Soon after, my son got to meet his sisters and nephews, family full circle. All I ever wanted in life was to be happy and have a family. My son and I got to share our AA anniversaries. I've been able to pass on my past sobriety chips to him. And I heard through the meeting grapevine that my son shared the story of our meeting in one of his other AA meetings. He said he felt he needed to be shared to help others. What a blessing AA is. I now have more than 40 years sober. I am truly joyous and free. I've come a long way from that first Mother's Day in AA, but I keep coming back, as miracles never cease in recovery. Signed, Mary Ann G. of Dundalk, Maryland. In town. Moving can make it super tricky to connect to a new AA routine. So glad he took the suggestion to do a 90 and 90. My AA friend Jesse was approaching double-digit sobriety and seemed well-grounded in the program. So I found it curious when she spoke the following words to my home group. When I get to Florida, I'll go to meeting on day one and treat myself like a beginner and go to 90 meetings in 90 days. What I heard was Jesse reciting the advice her sponsor had just given her on how to handle her upcoming move. But why would anyone need to repeat the 90 and 90 suggestion we give to new members? Jesse went on to explain how her sponsor saw her upcoming move to another state as a potentially dangerous time, and that finding meetings where she'd feel comfortable and get involved might not happen right away without effort. She would need to quickly get connected and find a home group, a sponsor, and a network of women in the program. Like so much of what I had already learned in AA, I took the suggestion as another tool that I would tuck away in my AA toolbox, not knowing when I might need to pull it out and put it to use. These tools helped me apply the steps in my day-to-day life, deal with family dynamics, face work problems, know how to attend social gatherings and holiday parties, and address the issue of medically prescribed drugs, flat tires, and broken shoelaces. My toolbox was getting big. But wouldn't you know, less than a year later, I accepted a job in Vermont that required moving my family from the Mid-Atlantic area to a state I knew very little about. I had 17 years of sobriety, and during that entire time had had only one sponsor and one home group. In Maryland, my sober life had matured, surrounded by a warm AA community that was tight and supportive. They had always thrown me a lifeline when I needed it. I was nearly an old-timer, and I thought that I had a handle on my sobriety and would easily survive my move. Or so I envisioned. In reality, my move would bring on a host of time-consuming tasks beyond starting a new job, new schools and adjustments for the kids, unpacking boxes, locating grocery stores, finding new doctors, dentists, and a church. I had a dozen or more small excuses not to find time for AA, and one gigantic reason to find new AA friends to maintain my sobriety. Luckily, I remembered Jesse's words to treat myself like a newcomer and go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I became determined to follow her advice. The first meeting I attended was nothing like those I was accustomed to back in Maryland. First, the starting time was different, 7 p.m. rather than 8:30, and they began the meeting with a different set of readings. Rather than the raised hand sharing, members were randomly called on. Even the meeting ending was different. Instead of concluding the meeting with prayer, they held hands and recited this responsibility declaration. The next few meetings I attended felt equally unsettling. I wasn't feeling the warm embraces that I had grown accustomed to back home. It seemed to me that I would never fit in and enjoy the fellowship as I once had. I didn't even like the coffee. After about 5 or 6 weeks, however, the meeting slowly began to feel like a warm, cozy blanket. I began to make phone calls and make new friends. Finally, I was getting involved in AA again. I even helped to start a meeting in the small town where we lived. I was home. 5 years later, I accepted another job in a new location, this time in Boston. Again, I heeded Jesse's suggestion. Once again, I found the typical distractions of relocation calling me with excuses not to go to meetings. But I went anyway. I didn't like the meetings. Different people, different formats, too many speaker meetings, and many meetings were 90 minutes in length. But I reminded myself to build a strong foundation. And like magic, after about 6 weeks, I got used to the differences, made AA friends, took on service commitments, and even began to like the coffee. A few years later, I was off again, this time to Chicago, then to New Jersey, then again back to Vermont, followed by a move to Illinois, where I now live. Every time, the adjustment to the new AA community has required effort and commitment. And after a few months of treating myself like a beginner, I was home again. Thanks to AA and my higher power, I have not allowed geographic moves to interrupt my spiritual program and my meeting attendance. Moving, whether across town or across the country, can be a slippery time for us. I found through experience that when we remember to treat ourselves like beginners and build a firm foundation where we are planted, we can stay sober no matter what. Thank you, Jesse. Signed, Todd K. in Huntley, Illinois. And our next story is entitled, Always Remember. One morning on a beautiful Hawaiian beach, she heard a share that reminded her to cherish her seat. This morning, at a meeting near the beach, a woman in her 30s shared with tears in her eyes that she now had only one day sober after relapsing for 2 months. I remembered seeing her at a meeting on the other side of the island a few months earlier. She had been sitting up front, looked radiant, and was the first person to jump in and speak. Her message was both hopeful and helpful. Now I was glancing at her sitting in the back of the room. She was a sad sight. So what happened? She went on to say that she had met a man, moved in with him, quit going to AA meetings, and started drinking again after 15 months of sobriety. I heard a tiny voice in my head say, "Uh-oh, sobriety always has to come first." This statement had been drummed into my head when I started in AA nearly 5 years ago. Meeting makers make it was a phrase I heard repeatedly. This old-timer once said in a meeting that God has to come first, which includes going to meetings, then family, then work, then friends. These were a new set of priorities for me. Before getting sober, I was spending my days at work with a hangover and my nights drinking. This left very little time for God or family. I foolishly thought the people in the bars were my friends. After sobering up and doing the steps, my priorities did indeed change. God became my employer. Meetings helped me connect with a higher power and my family, and I rebuilt relationships. The friends I thought I had at the bars drifted away, and I developed new, sober, supportive friendships. My life changed from my primary relationship being with alcohol to my most important relationship being with my higher power. Since getting sober, I've learned to listen and trust my higher power. Attending meetings is one way I enhance that connection. I've had the opportunity to travel to the mainland U.S. from my home in the Hawaiian Islands on Maui. I've attended meetings in California, Washington, Oregon, New York, and Florida, and I've gone to meetings here on the islands of Oahu and Lanai. At times when traveling, I find it difficult to interrupt the flow of activities to step out and get to an AA meeting, but I do it anyway. And when I do so, I am always rewarded with hearing just what I needed to hear that day. For instance, the last time I went to a women's meeting in California, the speaker chose an article from the grapevine by a woman who wrote about getting sober in Hawaii. I smiled inside as the speaker started to read. I felt that my higher power was confirming to me that I was in the right place at the right time. It had taken some effort for me to get to that noon meeting that day. It turned out my determination was well worth it. A woman even asked me to be her sponsor after the meeting. When I remember first and foremost that I'm an alcoholic and I need my medicine to keep my disease in check, I start my day with meetings and prayers and meditation, then let the rest unfold. I remember that I can't let anything or anyone distract me from my commitment to my sobriety or my spiritual connection. Seeing the women with one day of sobriety today reminded me that sobriety is only lived a day at a time. I cherish my seat in the rooms. I earned it. The pain and suffering of alcoholism is no match for the joy and comfort of being sober. For the joy and comfort of being sober. So for today, and hopefully with God's grace, I'll stay committed to this. Signed, Leah H. in Kihei, Hawaii. And we'll wrap it up with a short story entitled 52 Years Ago. Thankfully, I was not required to apply for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. If so, I would have likely been denied. I'm a longtime sober member of AA. My introduction to the program came as the result of a family intervention. I was asked by my wife, our minister, and a friend if I wanted to stop drinking. It was an ambush situation that hit me on a morning after. I had a wicked hangover and caused a rowdy ruckus when I arrived home the night before. The police had come to the house and gave me a scolding. The officers had asked my wife, "What do you want us to do with him?" Following a long silence, she turned without a word and left the room. I felt compelled to say yes to everyone that I wanted to stop drinking. But it was a half-truth. I did want to quit getting drunk, but I did not have that gift of desperation that I hear people talk about in meetings. The friend who came to my intervention that day was Larry. We used to frequent the same friendly bar where many of us patrons were underage drinking buddies. One night back then, Larry felt the need to drive me home. He helped me to my doorstep, rang the bell, and ran. My mother opened the door. I crossed the threshold on my hands and knees and waved to her and her guest before mounting the nearby staircase and crawling up to my bedroom. That morning, years later, at the intervention, I answered the door. My old pal Larry asked me if I wanted to stop drinking. I muffled an uncertain yes. He told me matter-of-factly, "Don't drink today. Have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and a glass of milk. Be ready at 7 and I'll take you to an AA meeting." That was 52 years ago. Today I go to meetings, don't drink, change my ways, and receive the blessings of a sober fellowship. The fact that I may not be a full-fledged alky, since I never required hospitalization, detox, DUI, handcuffs, can still disturb my thinking from time to time. Thinking about it too much is a red flag for me. It can lead to poor me stuff, but I share about it. The best thing of all is that it's the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Signed, Philip T. in New Britain, Connecticut. And that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to the AA Grapevine. My name is Shelley Miller, and I have been your volunteer reader. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.